May 21st. I guess it's about 8:44 in the morning. And we're in hearing room A. I'd like to thank the members of the House of Representatives, the members of the Oregon State Senate for coming to this meeting and being a part of this committee. I'd like to recognize Senator Speaker, Co-Vice Chair Kotek for a motion on the adopting the committee rules.
Mr. Co-Chair, I move that.
Here's what I found on the web.
That's not what I.
Wow. Okay. Sorry. Scary. Good morning, Mr. Co-Chair. I move that we adopt the rules for this committee, and I believe that they are identical to the ones that we had.
Well, you're allowed to take action. They're special session.
Special session rules, but other than that, nothing different.
You can take action.
Thank you, colleagues.
I didn't mean to catch you unawares. I thought it was just a standard operating procedure. Discussion on this motion to adopt the rules. I know Senator Voquist, you're going to vote no. Is there any other person that wished to vote no on the adoption of the rules? Please note for the record, Senator Brian Voquist has voted no on the motion to adopt the committee rules. The committee rules have been adopted. I will now open a public hearing and a work session on House Bill 4301, and I would like to ask the committee staff to please explain House Bill 4301.
Good morning, Mr. Co-Chair and Madam Co-Chair and members of the committee. House Bill 4301 extends a current existing policy whereby businesses that file as either a partnership or S corporation, the individual taxpayers who receive income from a partnership or S corporation or an LLC that files as such entities, can receive a preferential tax rate on the non-passive income from those entities as long as certain requirements are met. What House Bill 4301 does is extends that policy to sole proprietors. So in doing so, with the language in 4301, sole proprietors and LLCs that file as sole proprietors, so-called single-member LLCs, disregarded entities, they would be brought into this policy. So if 4301 were to become law, then the existing policy would also apply to businesses that file as sole proprietors. So to elaborate a little bit more on and get to a couple questions that came up the other day, in OLIS and on the screen, there's a document titled House Bill 4301 Impact, and that has the revenue impact there that starts off in about $11.3 million in 2018, and then it grows about 5% per year. And some of the questions that came up were, I'll touch base on them in order, was the LLCs. Currently, businesses exist. They can be a C corporation, an S corporation, a partnership, a sole proprietor, or an LLC. And all of those, the C corporations aren't on under discussion today. They file under their own code. But the S corporations, the partnerships, and the sole proprietors, and the LLCs, those entities will all pay income tax through the personal income tax. Now, part of the language disconnect that we go over in the revenue members will be a little bit more familiar with this, is that those entities exist, but there is no LLC tax form. You can't go to the IRS and pull up your LLC tax form. You can pull up a Schedule C for a sole proprietor. You can pull up a partnership return or an S corporation return. LLCs, when it comes to file their tax returns, or the individuals who receive that income, they have to choose one of those entities. So most LLCs file as a partnership, so they show up as a partnership on the return. LLCs can show up as an S corporation or a sole proprietor, depending on the structure of the business, depending on the details of the business. So the LLCs are pulled into the tax code that way. So the current program includes LLCs as long as they file as a partnership or an S corporation. So that was one of the questions that came up on Wednesday. So if we scroll down a little bit on that page, there's a distribution table. There are some questions about this. The total impact of $11.3 million is distributed accordingly. Now, some of the definitions here, the table there is by total income, and the total income is kind of a key term from a tax return. This includes all of the income on an individual's tax return. So, for example, if you're talking about a joint return, and you have a sole proprietor with income of, say, $200,000, and the spouse has income of $200,000, then their total income would be $400,000. So that total income is the entire tax return. So that top bar there for the over $500,000 group, that's not $500,000 in sole proprietor income, it's total income for that tax return and on down the line. So the number there on the right, those numbers sum to about 6,000. As we discussed, or as was discussed the other day, I think, there are about 300,000 sole proprietors projected to file a return in 2018. And a little less than 10% of them, we think, will meet the labor requirements. Basically, there has to be at least one employee. And for the year, all of the eligible employees work at least 1,200 hours in Oregon, and only weeks in which the employee works 30 hours count toward that total. And so when we bring all those requirements into play, we think about 12,000 sole proprietors, including single member LLCs, would be eligible for the program. And then the model simulations that we run indicate that about half of them will opt in. So about 6,000 will opt in, and the overall average is about $1,900 for the tax reduction. But those numbers there, the 445, that's our estimate in 2018. If this becomes law, there'll be 445 tax returns with sole proprietor income that opt into the program. And their total income is the $500,000. And then so on down the line, 1375 for the next group, and all the way down to the lowest group, the less than 50 total income, about 928. So those numbers should total to just about 6,000. And so that's how that breaks up. There was some confusion the other day around business income versus total income. And this just presents this. The standard way we present these distribution tables in the Revenue Committee is by total income on the tax return. So that's that piece. And I think the only other question that came up was the nature of deductions. The deductions that aren't allowed when using this program are the personal deductions on the individual tax return, not the business deduction. So, Mr. Co-Chair, that was a brief summary and trying to get at the questions that were raised the other day.
Okay. I would also like to ask any members of the committee, if you have questions for the committee staff, the director of the Revenue Department, in regards to what he has said. Recognize Senator Brian Boquist, please.
Thank you, Mr. President, and thank you for the overview to the LRO staff. Chris, could you just briefly explain the automatic review process of this overall program that is scheduled for 2018 and 2022, and then the automatic adjustments should those forecasts be outside of the original 2013 review? I think the Revenue Committees are familiar with this, but just for the record, if you could just explain that process and its in its impacts.
Sure, Senator. In the 2013 special session, given the uncertainty around the impact, there was a kind of circuit breaker that was put into law that basically said, if the actual impact was much higher or much lower than the estimated impact, then there would be a change to bring that impact back in line. In that law, there are two phases of adjustment. The first one, LRO has to complete the report by July 1 of this year. And if the actual cost of the program in the first 2 years greatly exceeded the estimate, then the policy would be changed so that the tax cut would be less, the rates would be adjusted. And then in a second adjustment would occur. So that adjustment would occur, if it does, and would affect tax years 19 and later. Then in 2022, we would repeat that process, where we would compare the actual impact for 19 and 20 to the estimate made back in 2013. And it's that same process. If the revenue impact were much greater or much less than the estimate, then there would be adjustments to the policy to bring it back in line with the estimated impacts from 2013.
And Mr. Fred, just a clarifying question. And just to clarify, once the report is issued to the legislature, then it's the Department of Revenue who automatically makes whatever adjustments are necessary. Is that not correct?
That's correct. They are the law spells out a proportional change in the tax rates. That's how that's achieved.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Phil Barnhart, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to make sure I understand more about what you mean by the term total income. I understand that it includes not just the income that's produced by the business, but any income. But are we talking about income, the federal taxable income after state adjustments, or are we talking about something else?
It is not federal tax, Representative. It is not federal taxable income. The way the income, the taxpayers fill out, there are multiple steps to the process.
Yes.
The first step is a listing of all of your income. So, and this is wages, it's business income, it's capital gains. It even includes things like alimony, or you really get into weeds, some tax refund depending on itemizing situation. So that total income, and there's also, it can include some carry forward losses. But the main components, the biggest single component is wages, and then you have this business income from sole proprietors reported on Schedule C. But that includes the LLCs filing there. And then Schedule E, what we call Schedule E income, which is in part, the most of that is the income from partnerships and S corporations. So all of that is total income. And then there are some deductions that everybody can take that are independent. And then you get to federal adjusted gross income, which some folks are more familiar with.
Thank you.
And then after that, you get these other deductions to taxable income.
Thank you. That answers my question. Appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Mark Haas.
Chris, could you tell us the total cost annually of the entire pass-through tax break, just ballpark?
The, we're up to now? The first 2 years, it was $173 million.
Okay.
And it was projected to be about $200 million.
Okay. Okay. So what's the projection for coming year?
In the coming year, it's about $120 million.
Representative Greg Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Colleagues, really quick, I want to correct an error I shared during the last public hearing. I mentioned that there would be a reduction in general fund of $11.3 million and $11.8 million in 2018 and 19. And in the legislation, I was looking for reconciliation as it relates to Ways and Means. I had a chance to visit with LFO, and I should have remembered that at the end of the biennium is when we'll do our reconciliation, and therefore that's why it's not in the legislation. So I just wanted to let everyone know I misspoke on that, and I'm correcting that now. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further questions, comments? Just not that anybody cares about my feelings, but after listening to the opening statement of learned and high revenue staff and the Q&A that's just taking place here, there is absolutely no way Peter will, or would you want Peter to carry this bill on the Senate floor? I know. Not much of a sense of humor.
Mr. President,
yes,
it would help
sir.
Your feelings. I'd be more willing to carry on the bill and vote no against it.
No, I know. I think,
wow.
Believe me, I had a laughable moment by myself yesterday thinking who's going to carry the bill on the Senate floor. All right. So, okay, did you want to say some more?
The paperwork is in the OLIS. The fiscal statement and the revenue impact statement are in OLIS, just to let people know.
Okay, also.
And the amendment, and there are about eight.
Okay, any other questions? Yes, Representative Mike McLean, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senate President Courtney. Chris, based upon what you described as a control mechanism on the small business tax relief that the 2013 special session produced, will 4301 in its current version trigger any rate reductions on existing small businesses that are enjoying the relief of the bipartisan 2013 special session?
Co-Vice Chair McLean, to absolutely answer that, we'll have to wait till 19 to 20 until we get actuals. But right now, under current estimates, the impact estimate here of 10 to or 11 or $12 million a year doesn't take it outside that band to trigger it. It does make it a little bit closer. We get, because it will increase the cost of the program. so we get a little bit closer to that band. Perhaps an easier way to think about it is, under current assumptions, a revenue impact would need to, a change in the program would need to be about $30 million before we would see a trigger, before that trigger. So this is about half of that impact. So it doesn't take us past that point where a trigger is expected to occur, but it gets us closer.
Follow up. Does, once that band is discerned in 2022, is there any further rate reduction or rate increase that the current law would require in the following decade?
No, current law just has the two adjustments, the one that would be occurring this year in 2018 and then in 2022. Those are the only two.
Follow up. So as it stands now, the small business tax relief that the bipartisan special session produced in 2013 does not have a sunset and is providing small businesses with the certainty that's needed. And after 2022, the rates will remain consistent and assurances of small businesses will remain constant at that point.
That would be my read of statute. Current law, there's no sunset and no additional changes in statute today.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Greg Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Mr. Co-Chair, I wonder if there's somebody who could share with me why we crafted the legislation the way we did. As I look at the share of estimated tax reduction that was provided by legislative revenue, the greatest benefit of this legislation is going to go to those who are sole proprietors with at least one employee that earn over $500,000. They're going to receive approximately 43% of the impact, the positive impact from this. But those sole proprietors who are just trying to get off the ground, the person who's starting up a housekeeping business, or perhaps is creating a yard cleaning business, or perhaps is just trying to figure out how to kickstart some entrepreneurial idea, if they have less than $50,000, their benefit from this of the total pie is 2.5%. And those businesses that are $50,000 to $7,000 get 3-4%. And then those entrepreneurs that have $70,000 to $100,000 are at 5%. And so the vast majority of entrepreneurs who are trying to get started receive the least amount of benefit. Yet those who earn over $500,000 get the greatest amount of benefit. And I'm trying to figure out if we're trying to assist entrepreneurs that are classified as sole proprietors, why wouldn't we reverse this and give those who are trying to get off the ground in the first year or two the greatest amount of opportunity? I wonder if someone could help me understand what I'm missing here.
Senator Bamboquist.
Just to provide context and actually to agree with Representative Smith, in 2013, when this was passed, at that time, C corporations that were large were benefiting from quantitative easing and the ability to borrow capital at 2 or 3 percentage points, and small businesses of even the size of $5 million or less had no access to capital. And so the goal was to provide some sort of equity to get those businesses to expand. According to the Small Business Administration, using Obama administration numbers through 2016, we actually did succeed at doing that, growing small businesses in that category. As Representative Smith has pointed out, that category of larger groups have now have access to capital and are in at least decent shape as long as the legislature gets out of this building quicker on a routine basis. There are all kinds of regulatory issues. Having said that, though, what we proposed, which of course will not be considered here, what we proposed is exactly addressing that, and that is to create this particular bill in a manner in which there was a tax credit for the lower end, either $250,000 or less, or $500,000 or less, to address that exact issue. because we first helped the growth and we probably achieved that growth successfully, and then trying to move it to a different position. The unfortunate thing with tax code, as was pointed out by Chris here, is that there are all kinds of other factors that play into this. But that's how we got from 2013 to now. And of course, we're going to do what we're going to do here today, frankly, on 6-4 votes, but that's okay. Thank you, Mr. President. I hope that gives you an explanation of how we got here. Thank you.
Okay. Are there further questions, comments? Well, what I'd like to do now is go to public hearing and ask for testimony. There's no objection from the committee members. I ask, first of all, that the representative of the governor's office like to come forward, please. If they're not. Could Gina come up and work on that? I'm just going to try to answer a question that was asked. Could Gina come here, please, for representing the governor? And try to just answer the question that you asked. Even though I think it's a question, a comment, it may be just a difference of opinion. I cannot tell that. I'm not trying to, and it may not be fair to you. You need to identify yourself on the question you asked. And we'll just let, I did not ask the governor to be here, so if you're mad, be mad at me. So Gina has just come in the room, and she's the governor's number one advisor on this. So I'm trying to get an answer, but I'm not sure we can answer it in a way that you're going to be happy. So, and I don't want to get into a prolonged discussion, because I think Senator Brian Boquist has said it well as to differences in things. Yes?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I should have just pointed out, I'm not looking for an answer. It was more of an observation. I don't want to put anyone on the spot.
Okay, then fine. Thank you. Could you stay here anyway, just in case? I appreciate that. Again, thank you very much. Thank you. Can I call the first witness to sign up? And I don't know how to pronounce. Would you help me here? I don't know how to say Garrett. I don't know what to say. That is
Garrett Rosenthal.
Rosenthal.
Oh, thank you. Would Garrett Rosenthal please come forward, please? Would you tell us who you are and give us your testimony on House Bill 4301? We are in a public hearing on House Bill 4301. Please.
Co-chairs Courtney and Kotek and co-vice chairs Winters and McLean. Pleasure to be here. My name is Garrett Rosenthal. I live in Tualatin. I have sent this testimony in, but it was until last night, so I will read basically what I have. I represent the steering committee for Onward Oregon, and we're a virtual public interest group that has a contact list of about 25,000 people. We support small business, especially startups, and this is to the point that Representative Smith made. And while we accept the logic of the proposal to add sole source proprietorships under the same employment categories that were existing for the previous bill from 2013, in other words, one non-family person, 1,200 hours, and so forth, we do not support the current non-passive pass-through tax benefits, which go primarily to companies that no longer need these efforts. We feel they are a luxury we simply can't afford, considering the revenue constrictions that we have. With that consideration, we strongly urge that the governor's proposal be at least amended to make it revenue neutral so that there will be no negative impacts on education and social services. Lowering tax discounts or reducing the cap is one way to do that, or several ways to do that. They could be used to retain revenue neutrality and at least partly address the fact that, as pointed out, we currently provide more support for highly successful businesses than for smaller businesses and startups. And that would be our concern. Thank you.
Thank you. Just one. Questions, please?
Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you very much for coming here today. And also thank you for putting your testimony online before you got here. Appreciate it very much, Mr.
Okay.
Thank you. Is there anyone else wish to testify? I will close the excuse me?
You opened that public hearing and work session, so you can just
I've got a public hearing open.
Okay.
So I'm going to close the public hearing, and then I open the work session. Is that right?
Well, you opened both of them at the same time.
I did open both of them at the same time.
So you're good to go.
I guess I'm being told by alerted and high staff that I already opened the whole world, so I can just keep going. And so that is what I'm being told by staff. I'm being corrected, Representative McLean, because I know that makes you happy, that I have already spoken about the world being open. So here's where we're at. Now, what I'd like to do here is I would like a motion, a co-chair, to move the bill to the floor with due pass, but then we got eight amendments on OLS, eight amendments. I think every amendment, eight amendments. We can then do whatever you want with the amendments, with the main motion on the floor. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's a thing I'd like to do. So I'm not trying to pull a fast one here. I just a structural thing. So don't get threatened. Nothing's happening in the back or in the front. So could I have a motion, please, from you, Co-Chair Kotick, on House Bill 4301?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Let us not be threatened. So I'd move that we adopt House Bill 4301 with a due pass recommendation to the floor.
So the motion has been made that the House Bill 4301 be adopted and moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. So now we're in work session for full and complete discussion. Senator Brian Boquist, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I appreciate structure. Structure is always a good thing.
That's right. You are a military colonel.
That's right. Colleagues, I mean, I did happen to note we're the Dash 18 amendment.
No, there's eight amendments, not 18.
Well, there's a Dash 18.
Oh, yes, that's yes,
but
there
there's
is.
Eight posted.
That's right.
And I could, you know, very easily we could go on throughout the entire day discussing all of these. The House and Senate Republicans, in my name, put up three amendments. One is the repeal of 1528 itself. One is the closest we thought we came to an agreement in discussions with the governor's office that might be possible, and one is a potpourri. I don't think it's beyond reason, since all of the learned members of here have been around a long time. We know how the vote count on those particular three amendments would happen, and I would just actually point out to my colleagues, we probably know how the vote count in the others is going to happen. And so while we appreciate they're on the public record, Mr. President, I'm perfectly happy that we move on.
Okay, I just for the record, I want to ask Representative Mike McClain, do you know what the word potpourri means? Because I like the word. I like the word.
It's,
I haven't
I
heard
it. I believe it's called potpourri. Potpourri.
Potpourri. No, I like the word.
It smells just, good,
doesn't it? I know what it does.
I was doing it to help the good majority leader, the former head of the marijuana committee.
Mr. Chair, where I'm from, Condon. That was the correct pronunciation.
Okay, okay. Well, no, I like words. Can I? I like the word. All right. Discussion. Well, okay. Oh.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Marquez.
I have a potpourri of things to say. I very much want to commend Governor Kate Brown for coming forward with this. She testified the other day that it was her sense of fairness that drove her to this, and fairness is her signature. It's what she's about. It's why she's so well-liked, I think, in this state.
It's the honor.
But I have a different perspective on the overall pass-through break that we passed in the grand bargain, and that is that the jury is still out. We don't know if it's working. We don't know if it's not working. We don't know how well it's working. We don't know if it's effective or ineffective, because it's never been really analyzed or hasn't been an impact study done on it. And partly that's because it's only been in effect a couple of years. One of the amendments that I did have up there that we're not going to act on does call for a study next year so that we can see precisely what's working or what's not. If it's not working, if the greater benefit to this state isn't worth $240 million of biennium, then we should get rid of it. If it is, if we have those benefits, then we should keep it. I suspect that, like most things around here, it's a mixed bag. That we'll find that parts of it are working, others are not. Maybe it's good for the forest products industry, bad for retailers. Maybe it's good for veterinarians, but lawyers shouldn't be taking advantage of it, or whatever. And then we can make some precise changes to it. And I think that's been our problem in the last couple of years when we've attempted to fiddle with this, is nobody can say for sure whether it's freeing up capital or creating jobs or anything else. And so, until we have a definitive study or an analysis on this, it's hard for me to support expanding it. So, and while there's been no study on this, there have been some red flags from CPAs who've come before the revenue committees over the last year, characterizing this as a runaway train, with stories about doctors calling in saying, how did I get a $20,000 bonus from the state? Out-of-state investors saving $80,000 on this tax break. And so, but again, there's been nothing to corroborate that. So I do think we need to look harder here before we expand it. And finally, Mr. Co-Chair, somehow this conversation has changed. We were talking about student debt, skyrocketing tuition, classroom sizes, and somehow this year it's changed into business tax breaks. And I just don't think that's right. A few weeks ago, 13 days ago, in my district, the voters passed a $165 million school levy, property taxes, and the margin was 70 to 30. All of us have been in elections, and we know that 70 is a pretty good number to hit. And yeah, I think that's so. Why they send their guys from Beaverton up here to engage in that conversation about education and the vexing problems that we need to fix and work together to fix them. So I hope that when we get out of this special session, we can return to that conversation about our schools, community colleges, and universities and how to make them better. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Senator Burke.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I wish to associate myself with the remarks that were just made by Senator Hass, and I won't repeat them. In deference to the governor, I will be voting to send this out to the floor today, but I share the concerns that were expressed.
Representative Greg Smith, please.
Mr. Chair, when it's appropriate, I want to make a motion on the Dash 5 amendments. I just want to get in with you.
Okay, you want to move the Dash 5 amendments, is that correct?
When it's appropriate, yes.
Well, it's appropriate. You make your move now.
So, Mr. Chair, I'd move the Dash 5 amendments to House Bill 4301.
Okay, so Senator Greg Smith has moved the Dash 5 amendments to House Bill 4301. To your motion, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colleagues, what we're talking about today is how do we assist our smallest business owners in growing. And I would share with you that I, on average, work with about 185 sole proprietors or partnerships every year. And I had my office look at the amount of time I spend on it. It's over 850 hours a year. The number one issue that small business owners have is access to capital. How are they going to generate capital to take their next step? The second thing they worry about is how do they hire their very first employee? Many sole proprietors don't understand that concept. They can't visually see how do they hire their first employee. And the third major issue is how do they remain in compliance with the Oregon Department of Revenue and the IRS? It's a major, major fear for sole proprietors. And so what this amendment does is it says if you're a sole proprietor and in the last 3 years you've been audited by the Oregon Department of Revenue, say you were audited in year one, not year two, but in year three you were audited, and in those audits you had a 95% or greater rate of compliance, then you shall now not be subject to audit for 5 more years. And this will alleviate a tremendous amount of anxiety for these entrepreneurs and let them focus on what they do best, and that's grow their business. So effectively what this does is it said if you're an honest business owner, you keep doing business, and you don't have to worry about being subject to an audit for a period of time because you've already passed at least 2 audits with 95% or greater.
So we're discussing the Dash 5 amendments. Now, Senator Brian Boquist, was your comments to be on the main motion, or is it to be on this? Because you had your hand up before I recognized him.
Just not on this, on the main motion.
Okay, thank you. Discussion of this.
Mr. Co-Chair, I'm putting Chris on the spot a little bit because I don't think he's had a chance to review this. So off the cuff, Mr. Allen, I mean, your thoughts on this?
From what I'm reading here and from what Representative Smith said, it seems to deal with an uncertainty about small businesses as they're changing and growing and the uncertainty of being audited by either the IRS or the Department of Revenue. I think it's getting at an issue that it's not entirely certain how the IRS or DOR selects returns for audits. There are some triggers, though, and especially in a day with all of the software and the algorithms that can be put to use, certain combinations of information can be a red flag or just a trigger that pop up either at the federal level or DOR. That's part conjecture on my point. I don't know exactly how that works. It's kind of a black box for reasons of not conveying to the public exactly what they're looking at. But if a certain combination of factors pop up, that can trigger maybe not an automatic audit, but an automatic notification to the taxpayer where the IRS or DOR sends out some sort of a letter or initial communication to the business. And for a lot of folks, that's not a piece of mail they ever want to get. The only piece of mail they ever want to get from a tax agency is a refund. And some of these notices can be pretty daunting and not very clearly worded. So I think, just from my initial look on it, is it's trying to get at that to say that if you have a short history of being near perfect compliance, that's the 95%, that there is a grace period, if you will, of 5 years that, okay, you've gone through an audit or two here and you've come out very well, then we're going to leave you alone for 5 years. And I assume that means related to that particular issue, because there could be other issues that pop up that wouldn't be related to that. So those are some of the questions I have on how the Department of Revenue would administer that. It can't affect the IRS, because the IRS is the federal government, so this would just refer to the Department of Revenue.
Mr. Co-Chair, may I ask a question?
Yeah, one second, just let me do this. Okay. I'm going to recognize everyone. Representative Smith, it was you who put the motion before us. I was watching your body language. Everything was yes, yes. But do you want to add anything before I go to Representative McLean and in Speaker Cote?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Chris did an excellent job summarizing. What I would share with you is many of your sole proprietors are home-based businesses. And the home-based business allowance on your taxes really is a red flag for audit, along with donations, along with vehicle mileage usage. And so if you have an entrepreneur that has a personal vehicle that they use for their business and they put on a high number of miles and they operate out of their home, which many sole proprietors do, right there are two major flags that get signaled. And quite often these sole proprietors are receiving letters saying, verify this. And so what I'm saying is if in a period of 3 years, they receive these letters, they verify it, they demonstrate that they're in high compliance, that they're honest, then they don't receive those letters for a number of years. Five years.
Representative McLean, are your remarks on the motion, the amendment, or on the main motion?
Not.
Okay, Speaker, Co-Chair Kotek, you wish to speak?
Yeah, if I could, I'd like to ask my chair, and he's been chair now 10 some years. Have you had any conversations about this topic? I mean, one of my concerns is this is a first time I'm actually seeing the amendment today. History on having this conversation? Because I'm not sure we have anything to go on here.
Thank you.
And let the record show that the person who's about to speak is the Honorable Phil Barnhart, that he has been referred to as a lifetime chair of the House Revenue Committee. Please speak.
Boy, in that case, Mr. Chair, I'm only 12 years old.
We, of course,
that isn't true. Thank you, Madam Speaker, for the question. Look, this is an issue of first impression for me, and I have several questions that I'd like to have answered, and I don't know whether it's possible to get them answered in the time that we have or not. Question number one, what's the department's view on this motion, on this amendment, and does it adequately describe the sideboards that would allow them to do an audit or not allow them to do an audit? I don't know, for example, what the term 95% or greater rate of compliance on returns audited during the period means, and I think it would be useful. I mean, I certainly, in common language, I can understand it, but I have no idea whether they have a scaling or a measurement system that they use against which this would apply in any sensible way. The other question I have is any concerns they have about whether this might affect their ability to manage tax compliance. And the third question is really not on that topic. It's whether or not, and this may be a question for LC, whether or not the motion fits within the relating clause of the bill. And I'm having a hard, I think I like the idea, but I'm having a hard time figuring out that it actually fits the relating clause. And these other two questions I have.
Can I make a suggestion? Can we stand at ease and see if we need to have anyone come up and help us out here at the moment?
Okay, we'll stand at ease while the House confers.
Have you figured
here upon further consideration, I think it would be in this institution's best interest if I withdraw my motion, and I look at reintroducing it in the future with a little more thought provided by myself and my staff.
Speaker, Co-Chair, Kotek, please.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And I want to thank Representative Smith for bringing this forward. As you could tell, we haven't had a lot of conversation about this particular topic, but at first blush, I think Representative Smith is raising some very important issues around very small businesses, how audits are conducted, and look forward to working with him next year to have further conversation about this and work on it, because I think you're raising really good points and appreciate withdrawing, understanding that it probably needs a little more work. So thank you very much.
Anything further? So would the record reflect that the motion on the Dash 5 amendments has been withdrawn? And so now, right? All right. So now we're back on the main motion to move House Bill 4301 to the floor of the due pass recommendation. Further discussion. Representative Mike McClain, do you want to talk now? Because you had your hand up before all this started.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it would be, before you go to a vote, whether it's now or in a bit, could we stand at ease for 2-3 minutes before we vote?
Okay. What I'm going to do is... do you represent, excuse me, Senator Brian Boquist, you wish to speak?
I do have on the main motion, so comment, man.
You want to make a motion too?
No.
He wants comment.
Okay. But you don't object to standing at ease for 5 minutes?
Just before we vote.
But let him talk first.
Excuse me.
He wants to have a few words to say.
Representative Brian Boquist, please.
Thank you, Mr. President.
I'm doing my best.
Doing absolutely fabulous, Mr. President. Nice tie today, too, by the way.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
So, I
got another one upstairs, and I didn't know which one to wear. Do you want to come up and check it? Oh, go ahead. I really like ties.
So, Mr. Co-Chair, can I just clarify?
No, 1 second. No, because I got to do this or I get in trouble here. I went there. We got to go there before I go to you. Representative. Okay, so speak quick, because they all want to speak on the House now.
Yeah, it should be no surprise of that chamber. I just want to go back and reiterate one of the comments that Senator Haas made, and remind you, Mr. President, that you and Senator Thompson did, in fact, in the last session, co-sponsor a bill to address the student debt issue. And we, in fact, in our discussions in the run-up here, which is clearly outside of the relating clause, in the future, we do need to address the student debt situation that's out there and how we deal at least with the interest on that category. And that's a topic that Senator Haas and I would agree on. What we're going to agree on in the next session as we get there will be interesting. And then I would point out, too, that we still have a system that's not only just the low-income businesses, sole proprietors on average earning $21,000 a year and incorporated small business $45,000 a year, but the low-income individuals in this state at the bottom end and that standard reduction and doing something to help those individuals. And I would just reiterate, whether we agree or disagree with the reports, we are sliding downward into the area where we need to be helping the most vulnerable in Oregon, and we need to be helping those smallest businesses build in the future. Thank you, Mr. President.
Yeah, we did introduce that bill, Senator Thompson. Speaker, Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I'm just clarifying. It sounds like there aren't any other motions, so we're discussing the main motion, and then we'll stand at ease right before we vote. I just want to make sure everyone's clear, because if people want to make comments, are we making comments now and then taking the vote?
Well, I had understood that the Leader of the House of Republicans wishes to have a 5-minute stand at ease at this time. You're getting clarified. Let's do that. So apparently where we're at is before we do that at ease, it's just going to be just before the vote. So are there anybody else wishes to discuss the main motion before we go to the at ease motion, or which I unilaterally will grant, and that's an authoritarian way of saying it. So is there anyone else? Okay. I will... grant
you. Would you repeat what you just said?
What I said is this. This is what I said.
No.
What I did is, Representative McClain.
Senator Winters rescinds her request.
Okay. All right. I'm going to grant the Honorable Representative Mike McClain a 5-minute timeout to go talk about life.
Thank you.
Okay. So please do so. You got 5 minutes.
Thank you.
I got 10:34 on my watch at this clock right here. And before us is the motion to move House Bill 4301 to the floor of the due pass recommendation. Now, Representative Senator Bryan, but you wanted to speak just before we did it or not?
No,
you're done. All right, we're going to go to the vote. Would the clerk please call the roll on the motion to move House Bill? I'll tell you when I'm ready. It'll build up here. House Bill 4301 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Please call the roll.
Yes.
Senator Boquist.
No, thank you.
Representative Smith.
Yes.
Give me a vote.
Senator Haas.
No.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Senator Burdick.
Aye.
Representative McClain.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Vice Chair. Co-Vice Chair Winters?
Nope.
Co-Chair Kotick?
Aye.
And Co-Chair Courtney?
Yes.
Co-Chair Courtney?
He said yes, absolutely.
So that is 7-3.
Senator Mark Hess?
Ed Nort. We need a majority of the Senate.
Correct.
I, as I mentioned before, I'm not sure it's time to expand a tax break that we don't know is working yet, but for purposes of moving it to the chambers, I'd change my vote to yes.
So you got that on the record, Senator Hess changes from no to yes? Right. And I believe that, therefore, we have a majority of the state Senate voting yes and a majority of the House voting yes. Is that correct? I believe that is correct. This motion has carried. Does anyone else have anything to put on the record this time?
Yeah. Who's the...
Just 1 second.
Representative Barnhart will be caring for the House.
Representative Barnhart carries the House. Senator Lee Beyer will carry for the Senate. Okay. Did you wish to speak, Senator?
I have a technical question for you.
Okay. Yes.
Procedural question.
Yes.
The sine die motion.
I'm going to do that now.
Okay.
I'm going to do that right now.
That's the question I was
okay.
asking. Thank you, Mr. President.
No, I'm good. Thank you for reminding me because I probably would have forgot.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah, I probably would have forgot. I probably would have forgot the sine die motion. Tina, I probably would have forgot that sine die. Okay, thank you.
Co-Chair, I move HJR.
No, can't do it. Okay.
Close.
I got to close the public hearing work session, House Bill 4301, and open a work session on... Where is my notes? Right here. Just a minute. I'm going to get it right. HCR 301. Would you please tell us which HCR 301 is, committee staff?
It is the sine die resolution.
This is the sine die resolution that closes the special session which we're now in. Is there any discussion of this measure?
None.
All right. Can I just go to a voice vote on this? I mean, come on. I mean, all right. All those in favor of HCR 3-1 going to the floor with a due pass recommendation, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed, no. This motion is carried. We are now finished that work session. I close the work session on HCR 3-1. Anything else anyone wants to put on the record? Any of you? Say anything? McLean, do you wish to something? Your body language is saying a lot. All right. Either one say.
The carrier.
I said who the carrier is. The carrier is Lee Beyer.
I'm talking about the signing.
I'm going to think about that. I get to choose that later. It depends upon how I feel about people by then.
You sure? How about me? How about, can I do
Williamson
it?
Williamson will carry this.
Why can't I do it?
You can co-carry it with me.
I would like to do it, and well, it's Democrats carrying the other one. Shouldn't a Republican carry this?
I agree.
We have a crisis manager professionally on the Senate side. Jenny Burdick made millions as a crisis manager. Jenny, work with the... He's a sole provider. I want you to work with Representative Mike McLean, the leader of the House Republicans, and Senator Jennifer Williamson, with leader of the Democrats in the House.
Not in the Senate.
Excuse me. Oh, well, I know you probably. that threatens you. So, and see if we're going to. Tina, whoever you want, I don't know who's carrying that sine die thing. Have you made your mind up? You want to wait and see?
I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Thank you.
I can't understand why.
Okay. I could tell you why, but all right.
I'm still going to hold the gavel up and wait.
All right. Anything else? Okay. We will now. I'm looking at my staff. She's gone. I'm going to adjourn. All right. I'm going to adjourn. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you. I didn't know I should continue recess it or not. I didn't know. Sometimes we recess.
Your
ways and means at the end. We never adjourn it.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to do. I